Remarks of the President at Toledo, Ohio, 31 October, 1952.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. You know, it's got to the point now where all the mamas in the audience point out to the children that there's Margaret Truman's father. Now Mike's got around to introducing me that way. I'm happy over it anyway. She's one of my best assets, I'll tell you that. My wife's mother, the other one. I'm very happy to be back in Toledo again. I was here twice during 1948. The first time, it was just about midnight, and in spite of the late hour, more than 7,000 of you came down to the station to greet me, and I never did forget that, and I never will. Then I came back just before the end of the campaign and talked to a great crowd at an afternoon meeting in your civic auditorium. That's when I read old man Hartley's book to you. You folks helped carry Ohio for the Democratic Party. I appreciate that very highly, and I always will. When I was here in 1948, I was introduced down to the auditorium by a wonderful public servant who was then the mayor of Toledo, and his name's Mike DeSalle. Since then, the whole country has come to know and love Mike. The only people who don't like him are the Republican politicians.
They don't like yourself.
They have good reason not to like him, because I don't know anybody who can do a better job of deflating a pompous Republican politician than can Mike DeSalle. You just turn him loose in the Senate next year and see what he'll do to some of those old Republican windbags. I gave Mike DeSalle one of the toughest jobs in Washington outside my own when I made him head of the price control. He was really on the hot seat. His job was to try to protect your pocketbooks. To do that, he had to stand up against every selfish special interest in the country and against almost all the Republicans in Congress. And that's just exactly what he did. And that's why all the special interests are fighting him now and supporting the Republicans. That's also why every one of you ought to be for him. And of course, I know you are. I hope you'll send Tom Burke to Congress with Mike, and that you will continue your good government in Ohio with Frank Lashey for your governor. The principal reason I'm out on this tour, and I've been 18,000 miles and I expect I've talked to 15 or 20 million people, is because I want you to put a man in the White House who will continue the policies of the Democratic Party. Now send Hadley Stevenson to Washington and John Sparkman as vice president, and you can't make a mistake on that. You know, we Democrats have a big advantage in this campaign. We've made a record that we're proud to talk about. We've learned how to get and keep prosperity and full employment in this country. And we've done it throughout this difficult period after World War II. And on the international scene, we have taken the lead in forging an alliance of free countries so strong that the advance of communism has been checked and thrown back all over the globe, including Korea, where our boys are fighting so gallantly right now. The Republican Party can't run a campaign on the record. They're ashamed of their record, and they ought to be. So they're playing a game with the American people called Cover Up the Record. The first thing they did to cover up their miserable record was to find a candidate for president who had nothing whatever to do with making that record. They nominated a man who had made a great reputation as a war commander and whose further reputation after the war was built in carrying out the foreign policy of the Democratic administration. They figured if they had a man to lead the ticket who was a part of the Democratic record and one with all kinds of glamour besides, people wouldn't think of him as a Republican, so they might not vote against him the way they would against any other Republican. Now, I don't blame the Republicans for wanting to hide their record, but I don't think we ought to let them get away with it, and that's the reason I've been going around the country showing the people what it is, and my, how they like it and how the Republicans hate it. So I thought I could help best in this campaign, just going around and telling folks about the Republican record. I guess I've read more notes and more votes out of the congressional record than anybody ever read before. You know, the congressional record's the driest document in the world. I used to help to make it, and I know. Now, in each talk, I can only read a small part of the record. And since this is Mike DeSalle's hometown, I'll pick out the Republican record on price control, and it's a honey. You may have heard the Republican candidate talk about the high cost of living. He blames it on the Democratic administration. Have you ever heard him boast about his party's votes in Congress on price control? No, indeed. He never mentions them. That's part of the terrible Republican record he's trying to cover up. That record starts back in 1946. After the war, it was perfectly obvious that we needed to keep price control for the time being until our civilian production could get back to normal. But the lobbies and the speculators and their Republican friends in Congress saw a chance to capitalize on the unrest that followed the war. They set up a great clamor to do away with controls immediately. They told you that price controls were keeping prices up. The National Association of Manufacturers ran full-page ads promising that if the controls were killed, prices would come tumbling right down. So the Republicans in Congress set out to kill controls, and they finally succeeded. And the cost of living went up 15% in 6 months. I'm sure you all remember that period, the worst inflationary rise in the history of the country. Did you ever hear the Republican candidate say, "Now I'm standing on my party's record, we've killed controls and we're proud of it"? He doesn't say that, he's afraid to. You hear him instead deliver ringing speeches about how the dollar is now worth less than it used to be worth, and he talks loud and covers up the record. He talks about it. Well, that's what I was going to say. The dollar may be worth 57 cents, as they say, but you've got 10 times as many of them as you had when they were worth a dollar. 1947 and 1948, I tried to get a standby price control authority back on the statute book, but the Republicans were in control of Congress. And that good-for-nothing, do-nothing 80th Congress laughed at my efforts. Then the Korean emergency came along, and by the time we got the controls bill passed, the stabilization agencies established, the cost of living had gone up almost 8% in 6 months. Early in 1951, after Mike DeSalle became price administrator, we put a general freeze on prices. But what did the Republicans do? They began a vicious attack on the basic price control legislation. Last year, the Republicans voted 7-1 to curtail price rollbacks and 12-1 to prevent effective control of black marketing in meat. And they put across that terrible Cape Heart Amendment, which has already cost the American people $1 billion in unnecessary price increases. That's your neighboring senator over here in Indiana. I hope you won't send anybody else back there like him. This year, the Republican congressman voted 4-1 to scuttle all price controls and 6-1 to end all rent controls. Do you hear the Republican candidate boast about that record? The cost of living is higher than it ought to be because the Republican Congress knife control. Republicans in Congress knife controls. But in spite of high prices, most people are better off than they ever were before. That's because under Democratic policy, production and income in this country have gone up a lot faster than prices in these past 20 years. Twice as fast, in fact. The dollar's not worth as much as it used to be, as I said a while ago, but people have a lot more of them than they ever had under any Republican administration. Now, this business... Now, this business of covering up the record extends to international affairs, too. And here, the Republican candidate has to hide his own record along with his party's. I never thought, when this campaign began, that any candidate would try to make a partisan issue out of Korea. When the communists invaded Korea, we responded to that challenge as a united country. Republicans and Democrats alike knew that the invasion had to be met by force of arms, or we would be starting down that hopeless appeasement road that can only end in a world war as it did before. But the Republican candidate thought that if he could divide the country and turn the people against the fight for freedom in Korea, he might pick up a few votes. It was a reckless and cynical act that could only weaken the free world, but he tried to pull it. However, he forgot about the record. First, he said we never should have pulled our troops out of Korea in 1949. But in the record is a very important document showing that the Republican candidate himself, when he was chief of staff of the Army, recommended that procedure to the President of the United States and to the Secretary of State. And I pulled that document on him, and he almost had a fit. He's been trying to squirm out of that one ever since. He even went so far in his Detroit speech as to deliberately misquote and falsify the record. That was a cheap trick that he must have learned from his new gutter playmate and political ally, Joe McCarthy. Then he said we should have built up the strength of the South Koreans. But the record shows his own party in Congress in 1949 and 1950 voted against aid for Korea. And the record shows that we built up a fine South Korean army, which is now providing more than half the frontline troops and is providing a bigger proportion of those troops as rapidly as they can be trained and equipped. I hope you look hard at the record of the Republican Party in this campaign. In domestic affairs, it's a record of opposition to progress, a record of reaction. In foreign affairs, it is a record of isolationism. And the Republican candidate in this campaign has shown that he has no qualms about hiding the record and even when necessary trying to rewrite it. You forgot, I guess, that the man who's going around talking to the people knows more about the record and know more about the things that have happened and more about the budget than any other man in the United States. And that's the reason I thought I owed a duty to you people to tell you what it is. That's one reason why it's vitally important to every person in this country that we elect a man of honesty and principle for president, Adlai Stevenson. The other good reason is Adlai Stevenson's own outstanding ability and great capacity for leadership. Adlai Stevenson has pledged to carry forward the democratic policies that have brought and maintained prosperity. He has pledged to carry out our struggle for peace. He has the knowledge of civilian government and the experience, which are essential requirements in both of these jobs. Now, none of you has any more important duty than to go to the polls next Tuesday and vote for the man who will direct our government for the next 4 years. It's your business. If you're going to be the government, as you should be, and you are the government when you exercise your right to vote, and when you don't exercise it, you're shirking your duty to the country and to the world. I want you to think about these things. I want you to inform yourselves. Find out just exactly what the Republicans did when they had control of the Congress. Find out how they've voted since. And then look at the Democratic record, and you'll find the Republican record has been entirely for the big interests and the special interests, and they don't give a hoot about the man who makes up the country. The Democratic interest has been for the common people, for the people that make up the country, and their record shows it. Now go to the polls and send Adlai Stevenson to Washington.